Okay, today is March the 25th, 1991, and this is a conversation with Blair Stonechild. Put it right there. You're the dragon's
mouth. Pleased to be here.
So, what I wanted to ask you about is you're from LeBret,
and that's... Well, actually from Muscatine Union Reserve, which is my home reserve, yeah. But I grew up in LeBret.
Mm-hmm. Where's your home reserve?
Muscatine Indian Reserve.
And the one that's further out east?
It's between Fort Capel and Craven.
It's in that region.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's next to Pyeplot. East of Pyeplot, yeah.
And how come you grew up in LeBret and not on the home reserve?
Well, you see, my father was a status Indian for Muscatine, but my mother was a Métis. And her family came from LeBret, and I went to Indian school in LeBret.
Mm-hmm.
So, just to kind of add more things to the story, my mother and father split up when I was very young, so I was in a curious situation of, you know, basically being raised by my mother's side of the family, and, I would, for example, go from Indian school to visit my grandmother, who lived about a mile away from the school.
Mm-hmm.
Walk there, the school would let me go on weekends, and I'd walk down there. And so that's why, you know, I was in a curious situation of being in Indian school, and knowing a lot of, relatives and that type of thing from Indian school, and at the same time, being raised by and large off the reserve, by my mother's side of the family.
So what time did you start school, at what age?
I was six.
And you went there until when?
Until 1965.
Mm-hmm.
Went there up to grade 9.
Mm-hmm. And then where did you go then?
From there I went to a high school in Regina.
Mm-hmm. A public high school?
It was a separate, separate public high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you graduated from high school here in Regina?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now the school in LeBret, that was a boarding school, right?
It was, yeah.
Did you get home on weekends or see your grandmother or?
Well, I was lucky because my grandmother just lived in the town there, I was usually able to get out weekends and go and visit
mm-hmm.
her. My parents, because they didn't live right there, or my mother and
mm-hmm.
My father-in-law, because they didn't live there, sometimes they would come every second, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it wasn't as easy to get around then
mm-hmm.
as it is now.
Yeah. I think in the last two or three years, a lot has been said about boarding schools. There were reports in the press, and then last fall or summer in on television too, about Catholic boarding schools, I guess in particular, about maltreatment of children, abuse and so on. And on the other hand, there are a lot of people that I talked to who said, well, I'm so glad I went to boarding school because I graduated, I learned a lot, and they didn't see it like that at all. So I think whoever you ask, you get very different opinions. What's yours?
Well, I basically found boarding school a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you say is very true, that you certainly have both sides. And I think from our point of view, it was a question of getting a good education. My mother felt that was good for us, and I had all my brothers and sisters were there.
Mm-hmm.
Two sisters and my oldest brother, they're all older
mm-hmm.
than me. And it was obviously a place where, you were fed.
Mm-hmm.
You had discipline, and you obviously had the environment in which you had to go to school and that type of thing. And I think the alternative to that was a reserve, in which you know, the situation wasn't anywhere as good, you know, like the schooling wasn't as regular, and there were all sorts of other problems, and like, you know, like home problems and that type of, which really, I think, you know, would have made things much more difficult.
Yeah.
And, but I my attitude personally was that, you know, like I wanted to get an education, and to me, an education was a way of sort of overcoming my difficulties, and a way of relating to the world, and a way of, you know, like I guess I believe in education as, you know, like as a way of, you know, I guess overcoming, you know, problems and that type of thing. So, you know, the education wasn't always the greatest at Indian school. It's true, you know, what you found out when, you know, when you leave Indian school and you come to the city, you find out that, you know, of course, you know, like the standards are not, you know, like, you know, standards are not the same. But nevertheless, I guess in many ways you sort of get out of it what you put into it. And that's, you know, like I, that was my attitude. And,
isn't it also a double-edged sword? I mean, you said you believe in education, and in that case, I think you mean mainstream education.
That's right, yeah.
But that education also alienates you from the native, or maybe not so much the Métis background, but the Indian background, I would think.
Well, it's very certainly very true that you know, you were not educated, you know, like in Indian ways in particular. You know, you were discouraged. You know, like you know, there's no question about that. I think that was, you know, definitely something that was a deficit. You know, I mean, you know, today I still, you know, not, you know, I just have a super, you know, like a superficial knowledge of language, and you know, most of my life after, like at university, has been spent, you know, like studying, you know, like rediscovering the culture and the politics and the history and all that type of thing, and.
Well, which language would that be?
Cree. And
did your mother speak Cree too?
She spoke. She could understand Cree, but she couldn't speak it. You know, she knows, like, a lot of my Métis relatives actually knew a lot of the words. You know, like you know, the.
And which language did they speak?
Well, again, that's interesting because my great grandmother, like that's my mother's grandmother, spoke only French and Cree. And then my grandmother, who was very colorful character, as I remember her, spoke actually mainly French and English. You know, like, and I think French, I think I'd say was probably, you know, like her best language. And then there was, again, she knew some Cree, and you know, I always remember because in her family of her grandchildren, like my mother's children were the only Indian status Indians in her family, so, you know, she used to remember her nickname for me was Moksi Savage, which is my little savage, you know, like, and I always remember that, you know, that was every time she'd see her, she'd go, oh, Moksi Savage, you know, and, you know, but, so, you know, like, they, you know, like, were, you know, obviously able to, you know, had some command over, you know, like a number of languages, English, French, and some Cree.
Yeah.
But none of my, you know, my siblings, you know, really, because we, you know, didn't really spend a lot of time on the reserve, you know, we're not, you know, fluent in language. Mm-hmm.
So, all in all, would you say it was a positive thing for you?
Well, I think sometimes when I look at the alternative of what was going on in the reserve, you know, I have to say yes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not saying it was the best. I, you know, there are a lot of things when you think back that could have been better.
What, for example, what would you improve if you had to say in that school? What would you have changed?
Well, I think that, you know, if you take a look at the principle, the fundamental assumptions of education, you know, like that is to foster a positive self-concept and, you know, like to help the child discover a place in society, you know, and of course what was being done to us was, you know, was very much the opposite. You know, they were attempting to destroy the pride in our heritage.
How was that
done? Well, I suppose the, you know, it could be done in very fundamental ways like religion, in which obviously, you know, you were taught Christianity, which I'm not criticizing Christianity as religion, I think it's very fine, but the way it was done to us was done in such a way that, that, you know, like it made us feel as though anything that were, that was Indian was devilish and wrong and that type of thing.
But you actually told that?
Well, I certainly think it was written between the lines, mm-hmm. you know.
Can you think of sort of a concrete situation where you were sort of made ashamed of where you came from and told that it was insufficient or whatever?
Well, I think certainly, you know, when you look at even the things, you know, in textbooks, let's say, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, you were, I think you were subject to that, you know, like in the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. What about language?
Well, I've, you know, I certainly, you know, know that, you know, there was virtually no Indian language that was allowed to be spoken. You know,
yeah.
Like, I guess in a lot of those a lot of those type of things, you know, some people obviously took the brunt of that type of punishment more than others. You know, like
yeah.
I tend to be the type who.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah? Hi, Phyllis. Fine, how are you? They're having that this afternoon, I think, at 3:30. Yeah, and I had a presentation on Thursday, but you weren't there because I wanted to give you a lot of stuff. Oh.
Okay.
Is it going there?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's going.
No, just to continue, I was saying that, you know, some kids took the brunt of things more than others, you know,
yeah.
And I think that, again, it had a lot to do with attitude, you know, like some, you know, kids came in there with, you know, being very resentful and,
yeah.
And rebellious and you know, like they, you know, like I know that some kids tend to be punished a lot more, you know, they tended to cross, you know, like the, you know, like the authorities and that type of thing more than others, and I tend to be one who didn't do that, you know, I like to, you know, be, you know, like, you know, like I think I have a,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I tried to get the most positive things that I could out of it.
When you were in school, what did you see for yourself? What did you want to become? Did you have any plans?
No, I didn't really have plans. I just wanted, you know, like I think what I wanted to do is I wanted to know and understand what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
This was,
mm-hmm.
was my major, you know, sort of objective.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I think I wanted to be educated enough so that, you know, so that I wouldn't feel inferior to other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, like, but what I'd seen among my relatives, by and large, was that, you know, because they were not knowledgeable about things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not that they weren't good people or were smart in their own way, but they just did not
have the education.
Not have the education, the skills, I guess, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to respond, you know, like, you know, things had to be, you know, responded to in writing, or if someone had to be, an official had to be spoken to, you know, like they just didn't have those type of skills.
I guess that was particularly severe for Métis people, right? Because
certainly
a lot of them couldn't go to school at all for a couple of generations.
Yeah, that's very true. And in many ways, they were like Indian people. They really didn't know, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
for the vast majority of them, other than what they heard orally. They really didn't, you know, like, I mean, they couldn't, you know, research these things or write
mm-hmm.
them, that type of thing. So, and in many ways, you know, they were in the same similar type of situation.
And when you went to university, did you go here to Regina, or?
No, I went to McGill.
Oh yeah,
Montreal, McGill University of Montreal.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. When was that?
That I started in '69.
Mm-hmm.
Fall of '69.
And you went to you did history?
No, I started out in engineering.
Oh.
And I finished.
How come?
I successfully completed my first year of engineering.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I was in the top 10. I was in the top 10% of.
Oh yeah. What made you choose engineering?
Well, I was good at science.
Oh yeah.
I was good at science when I was in high school, and. I sort of had, you know, like, you know, I like the idea of being, you know, sort of like an engineer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the program wasn't offered here
mm-hmm.
at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one of the things that motivated me too was that Like I knew, I was told that as an Indian person, I had the right to go to any university I wanted.
Yeah,
like that's
yeah.
something that I'd been told, you know. And
mm-hmm.
Also that the government would pay, so like I set my goals high.
Yeah, yeah.
And also my brother had been in the Air Force in Montreal, and I'd gone out to, that was, you know, like not long after Expo 67, like I'd
mm-hmm.
gone to visit him, and I had actually been out there as well on another occasion, which was in a sort of like a National Indian Youth Leadership type of workshop thing that was held out in Eastern Canada. So I had, you know, I'd been out there and I liked
mm-hmm.
it, and I, you know, McGill had a good reputation.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, well, you know, like, you know, I want to take an opportunity, you know,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, to be able to, you know, sort of get into a
yeah.
major university
yeah.
like that, you know,
yeah.
You know, with a good reputation and willing to get a good education. And as well, I think part of the thing too was that, you know, like the province here and, you know, and that type of thing, like I had worked, you know, like I had, you know, like knowing the situation that existed here, you know, the racism and that type of thing, which I, you know, like, I mean, I, you know, certainly wasn't, you know, what, you know, didn't escape that as a...
No.
You know,
would you say there's much less of that in Montreal?
Yeah, I'd say that...
is that true for Quebec, or is it just because it's a city?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably largely because it's a city. You
mm-hmm.
know, and you know, there's obviously, there was obviously, you know, a much broader range of cultures. They're like a much more diverse type of people. And, you know, but I certainly can't say that they were knowledgeable about it. You know, for example, I remember one of the first examples I remember of, like I stayed in residence at McGill for the first year.
Oh, yeah?
On the campus? On the campus, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I remember sitting down with one of the fellows who was in residence with me, and he actually asked me, like, you know, he was, you know, from, you know, well, you know, he didn't know much about Indians. And he said, I'm pretty sure he was from Quebec somewhere. He said, you know, do Indians on the prairie still live in teepees and hunt buffaloes? And, you know, the thing is, he wasn't doing it to be obnoxious. He was
actually asking
the question, you see. And, and so, you know, like, I mean, I was just floored, you know, that you know, people, you know, like, didn't even know that much. And, I think there was much more tolerance towards diversity there, and, you know, just because you're an Indian person didn't mean that people sort of, you know, you didn't feel uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you would in general.
Yeah, so, you see, this is an aside, but this weekend we were invited by a German family who came from East Germany 2 years ago, and for 4.5 years there they'd applied to get a visa. And that moment you're discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
So they lost their jobs and they really had a rough time until
mm-hmm.
they finally were allowed to leave. So for them to be here was really a great improvement, and
mm-hmm.
and they're going to make it. And then they said they also liked that this was a sort of multicultural society, and they felt there was no racism. And I said, I objected to that, and then I told them about Native people here because they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
You know? And if you had to talk to them, how would you explain that? Where, in what realms do you feel the racism most?
Well, I think that...
here in Regina.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Well, you know, it existed on different levels. Eh? Some
yeah.
people didn't like you because of the way you look, you know, or
yeah,
that type
yeah.
of thing. But I tend to think, like one of my beliefs, I know I went to high school here and I was the only Indian in high school.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
and because I did well academically, I was accepted, you know, like
mm-hmm.
as one of the group, but still, I mean, I still had racist incidents where I had run-ins with certain individuals, you know, at the school who didn't like me because I was Indian. But I think a lot of it has to do with the basics of values and that type
yes,
of thing, you
yes,
know,
definitely.
Because, you know, if you sort of accept, I guess you might say, what everyone is doing, and you do well at that too, they'll accept you.
Yeah.
But if you decide to be different, even
yeah.
though it may be your right to be different, and that's, I guess, that's sort of the thing that I would come back and say
yeah.
that, you know, like this being the Indian homeland,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the Indian culture, people's culture, being their culture, their rightful culture,
yeah.
that you know, they that should be respected, you know,
yes.
and that you know, like I think the other thing too is that Indian people are not. You know, people who I guess you might say are bad in the sense that they are are against the good things that that you know, for example, the European Society stands for. But obviously, there are. I think you know, the relationship has been one in which you know, there's, you know, it's mainly just been an effort basically by you know, European Society really to eradicate and impose, you know, like external things on. And that's wrong, you know.
Like, yeah, and they imposed and destroyed without knowing what they were destroying, without taking the time to look at what is there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, not respecting it. You know,
And then creating a false image and fighting against that image and not even knowing the people behind it. Yeah, I also heard from somebody who's a lawyer. He's of German descent too, and we got talking, and he said, "Well, of course there's racism here. For example, he has to do a lot of with real estate people, and he said there are certain areas that they will never, unless there's a coincidence or something, show even to native people areas." And I would imagine that you must be aware of that too.
Oh yeah, you know, like, sure, you know, like, you know, bump into situations where you can walk in a restaurant and people won't serve you, you know, like, I've been through that type of thing.
That happens here?
Yeah, sure, that's happened to my mother, you know, to my mother by one time, sure, and it happened to me right here at this university, you know.
Here?
Yeah.
At the club?
Yeah. It was... Yeah, I started back like I first, I was one of the first employees, as you know, at the college.
Yeah.
And I started in December of 76, and Ida Waskes, who I don't know if you know her or not, but, you know, she, you know, I'd known her before, and, you know, when I came back to Regina, she, you know, wanted me to come here and work, and so I, you know, like, I actually taught the first class here, and that type of thing. And, but, just to come back to the story, very early on when I had started here, Ida invited me up to the faculty club, and we went and ate there. And there was a lady, and as a matter of fact, I don't know whether it's true or not, but, you know, my impression is she was sort of a German lady. She was running the faculty club at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, Ida and I went up there, and we sat down, and, you know, waiting to be served, and this lady just kept on scurrying back and forth, and, you know, like, you know, like Ida would sort of, you know, look at her once in a while and say, you know, like, and then obviously, I don't know whether Ida specifically asked, you know, to be served or anything like that, but I mean, clearly we were being ignored, you know.
Yeah. So what happened?
And, basically Ida reported that to Lloyd Barber, the president of the university, and within, I think, virtually the next day, the lady was replaced, you know.
So did you leave that morning?
I beg your pardon?
When you were in there, they didn't serve you and you left without having been served?
Yeah, that's, I believe that's what happened, yeah.
Jesus, that's humiliating.
Yeah. Well, it is, yeah. Yeah, it certainly is, you know. But I mean, you know, it was indicative of the type of feelings. I mean, back in that day, when there were virtually no Indians here on campus, you know, like, I recall walking down the, you know, just, you know, literally, you know, simply walking down the hallway and literally feeling.
You're the only one, huh?
Well, you know, you literally feel the bad vibrations, you know, like, you know, uneasiness, tension, whatever, yeah, you know, like...
That college has come a long way since then. If you walk down and see it, see
absolutely.
All the Indian students.
Absolutely, it's just, I mean, you know, Indian students are just home now, you know,
and
I think a lot of the attitude of, a lot of the staff have changed, because I think back in those days there were a lot of detractors, you know, there were a lot of people really didn't think this was good. They were against, virtually were against the institution, you know, like the idea of the institution. And today it's, you know, like, I think that, you know.
I think a lot of non-native people here at U of R now see it as an asset, which it is, definitely. And I wish they make more use of it, because the college has a lot to offer. But then there's the prejudice and the fear also, like this. Were you there when I read from this beginning of an essay by this one student who didn't know it was a native class? God, I mean, it's weird. But come back. So you started off talking about your education. You started off with engineering and did 1 year, and then you changed to do what?
Yeah, political science.
Oh yeah. So that's what you did at McGill?
Yeah, that was my undergraduate degree.
And when did you finished that?
74, I moved into. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, like the, I guess the main reason why it changed is because, you know, like I felt that the engineering was, you know, like it was too far removed from the human condition, so to speak,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to, you know, like that was the kind of the, like I got caught up in the 1969 Indian policy protests,
which were,
you know, like that was the assimilation policy which was brought out, and I got caught up in that type of thing. And so I just changed over and changed into a social science program the year after, because it was more relevant and meaningful to me, you know.
And,
at least,
the research you've done since or so has been mainly in history, right?
That's right, yeah.
And Saskatchewan history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or rather, maybe Cree history, or Saskatchewan Indian history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I worked for the Federation doing, you know, one of the earliest jobs I had was working with Federation to do research on Indian rights, treaty rights, and land claims and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And that actually was sort of what got me into the area I'm in now.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, basically being having an interest in history.
If you had a choice, would you rather be sort of somebody who does research of that type and teaching of that type, or an administrator running this place or another place?
Well, I felt that for myself, I felt that you know, I'd be better use to actually changing things, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I think you know, for myself, I find the history and that type of thing very interesting and useful and worthwhile, but you know, I also see the need to go out and actually you know, to actually change things, you know,
work politically.
That type of thing, you know, like, not, well, I'm not really a politician, I don't really consider
myself
a politician, but, you know, like to, you know, be able to use administrative skills, you know, organization, and writing ability and that type of thing, to actually bring about change, because I've seen a lot of, I think college is no exception, I've seen a lot of cases where I think things really haven't progressed very well, largely because of the inability of the people themselves to manage it.
Yeah.
You know, like, adequately.
Yeah.
And so that...
Would you think that that's the most important... The most important thing that this college has to do, I mean, train Native students to become administrators, to work with their communities, or what's the...
Well, the college has a number of functions, I think. Certainly, I think the management type of area is one of the most important today.
Yeah.
And like, I think Indian people have been, I think have gone a long way to rediscovering their culture and to having that accepted by mainstream society. I also think that there's been an awful lot of progress in terms of fighting for the rights and getting those rights recognized. Mm-hmm. You know, like that, I remember back when I started, that was, you know, it was very much almost a losing battle because we were daily losing, you know, like rights and that type of thing. And, you know, that the early 70s was when that battle really started, you know, to regain those rights. And I've seen that progress, you know, like through various stages, you know, like judicial and constitutional and that type of thing. So that, a lot of that has is now in a more secure position. I think today that really what Indian people are faced with in many ways is the management. I mean, like this whole question of self-government, the whole question of taking over, you know, like with jurisdiction, that type of thing, or self-government also comes the responsibility to manage it. You know, like you can no longer rely on other people to manage it, which I think some Indian people have fallen into that sort of...
Well, that's the result of colonialism and being administered for so long.
Right? That's right.
And being told, you can't do it, we can do it better. Or
absolutely, yeah.
What else would this college really have to do in the long run? Or what would you see as really essential?
Well, I myself kind of personally hope that college can make an impact on, you know, like the society as a whole in terms of presenting, you know, different point of view, you know, in terms of...
But that would involve a lot of research, right, in various fields, and making a...
Well, I think the thing is that the problems of Indian people have to be tackled first.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's our first priority. That's really our, at this point, is our reason for being in many ways.
Okay.
And, you know, we struggle with problems of basic upgrading of students and mm-hmm. basic training of staff.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really at a point where, you know, we can shine like most institutions, I don't think,
mm-hmm.
because we, you know, we're still struggling with such basic issues. But I'm hoping that, you know, as time goes on, that, you know, this institution will be seen as, you know, like a center for, you know, like Aboriginal people,
yeah.
you know, maybe people nationally, yeah. Aboriginal, a quality institution
yeah.
where people can do research and people
yeah.
can teach
yeah.
and people can publish.
And I think the background for that is almost ideal. Hi. Oh, it's okay.
If you get garbage, I
can
go.
Oh, sure. Yeah, coming back to education and LeBret, I heard about removal of Métis people from the LeBret area, I think in the late 40s or in the 60s, I'm not sure when that was, to Green Lake or somewhere that
mm-hmm.
they were taken. Do you know something about that? Because I think that is only oral history so far.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's documented anywhere.
Yeah, no, I don't really know very much about it,
mm-hmm.
Other than, you know, like, I think perhaps the thing that might be relevant is that, you know, it probably had to do with these government requirements, you know, and I know there was also